I'm Jamie Bigham, and I live at Doreen in County Kerry.
Jamie, what is Doreen?
Doreen is a house near Kenmare, 50 miles west of Kenmare. It's a family house. It's where I was brought up, although I went to school back in the UK, but spent all the good times here. And it's a lovely house with a even lovelier garden.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
So hey, it's Peter, and you are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. For anything you need, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow and sideshow.com. Last week's episode was with Claire Greenslade of Hestercombe, and this week's one is all the way back to Ireland. It's a garden with a little bit of a difference, sort of forest, woodland meets garden. And the bit that caught my imagination on this one was, when we think of gardens one pays to visit, we tend to think of gardens that are pretty, that are in flower, that are sort of Windsor Parks, that are Hestercombes. We had Claire Greenslade on last week. And it makes you think as to why one would go and do that, why you would open your garden up to the public. I say garden, woodland, forest, leading towards that trajectory, if that makes sense. How do you make a living out of that? What do you do when the weather's really bad? How do you plan? It's like farming, but you can't predict how many people will come, rather than what the crop will be, or the return will be, or what the price of a ton of wheat will be, or barley, if that makes better sense to you. And this opens a sort of a different can of worms, because in conversation with good friend of the Sideshow, good friend of mine, I'm privileged to say, Tim Howell, we got talking about his taking photographs and the point of balance between what is a hobby, in my case, the Sideshow. In Tim's case, he's an engineer. In my case, I design and build gardens, but the Sideshow is sort of the hobby. It's the point at which I won't take money from listeners for the Sideshow, and equally, there are costs that I won't say I'm lumbered with, but I accept. I love what I do. I don't play golf. I'm a terrible cook. I have many flaws. I probably have more flaws than I have endearing traits. But I make this thing, and I'm aware that it's popular. But the popularity means nothing to me, because there is no return on if X amount of people listen to it, I get an added bonus, or I get a Christmas bonus. It doesn't work that way. And myself and Tim, I suppose, had that conversation where you bring the kids to the park. If you really, I'll get there, I promise. And you don't get paid for it. But you dance in puddles, their clothes are dirty, and it costs you money. And equally, the Sideshow maybe to me is a little bit that. But the question comes up again and again and irregularly of how one might support let's stick with the analogy or the example, a Tim Howell, who takes these professional, majestic, wonderful photographs of gardens I have done, and equally some of you listening. Howard White will tell me exactly the same thing, the man who made videos again of gardens that I made, not for money, but just to be part of the journey. However, there is a point where the costs start to trickle in, and you start to say, well, hold on a second, I've got a mortgage to pay, I can't afford to do X logically. And when another TV presenter wants to be interviewed and their media day is X day and I've got a real job to do, sometimes you just can't get to them. And so you end up with this hopscotchery, is that even a word, of how the Sideshow is working, what's going to come next, who's going to be next interviewed. And to be honest with you, I have no idea. So I'll put the part at which you can help the Sideshow in a nutshell. Don't take money from listeners, never will. However, people like Two Spots Coffee tend to not pay me money, but give me their beans. It's noted on sideshow.com. Equally, London College of Garden Design stepped in last year. Hi, Andrew, if you're listening. And they made possible an entire series of interviews, as, funnily enough, did CD Natural Stone, now that I think about it. There's no real apparent reason for them to do that. They could keep their money in their pocket. They could bring me for a pint of Guinness and I would interview them anyway. But when I go all the way back, myself and Howard and Tim, who spoke over the last couple of weeks or weekends, you start to realise that there's good people in life. There becomes a reason why you dance in puddles, why you become a benefactor is the wrong word, but why you sort of get behind, why you support something that is not BBC Gardeners Question Time. No disrespect to them, again, as always, I'm a big fan. You start to realise why you put all the kids in the minibus and you drive them to the next football match for no apparent reason. None of it makes financial sense. But if you want to support the sideshow and Peter's paying for it, then in a nutshell, I think, what, is this episode 414? But book me for the garden talk. Get me to host that series of shows. Turn around and say, Peter, we'll give you this amount of jammy Dodgers or jammy donuts. Here's a couple of quid to buy that new microphone because it is required. It is necessary. And whilst I'm really very grateful to you listening at home, I just can't accept nor take nor want your money. This latest episode is a corker. I really do hope you enjoy it. For anything else you need, Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/sideshow.com. We let this one play out and I'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend in the great outdoors. Thank you so much.
Well, let's get to the crux of this, because there's now a line being drawn in the sand, or at least in an invisible map somewhere. You are in Kerry, part of the kingdom, Paddy O'Shea County, let's call it that for a minute, and you're on the West Cork Garden Trail.
Well, this could be slightly controversial, but we've just snuck in to the West Cork Garden Trail. We're actually quite close to the border here. We're only 2 or 3 miles away from the nearest part of the border on the Healy Pass, going down into Glengariff. So although we're a little bit out on the limb for the West Cork Gardens, we're kind of here by a sort of honorary pleasure.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? That's okay. That's a nice, friendly way to look at it. Give me the history to Doreen. How far does it go back? What was it once? What is it now?
Well, my family came to live here in about middle of the 19th century, around sort of 1860, I think. And one of my ancestors saw that this place just had an amazing potential for a garden. Very sheltered position, surrounded by mountains. It's in a little bowl, close to the Gulf Stream, warm, wet. Things just grow incredibly fast here. And he saw the potential in that, which was pretty amazing, really, because there was pretty much nothing here before. There was a few scrub oak woods, and that was about it. But he set about planting up the area, and by the time he died, which was about 60 years after he started the planting, there was a fully mature garden here. And since then, we've just been kind of looking after it and improving it.
It's open to the public. That's the first part. How long does it take to do Doreen? I won't ask you how long people stay, because that's pi. It's 3.14, etc. It continues on. But how long would it take to cover the ground that is on here? How big of an area is it?
The garden covers 60 acres, but it's just a magical spot. It's got, you know, see the Caha Mountains. And on a nice day, we get lots of people who come here in the morning, and they're still here when the garden closes at 5-6 o'clock. We don't have a gate, by the way, so people tend to stay whenever they want to, really.
But isn't that the ultimate compliment, kind of a thing? It's don't go, don't leave my nightclub. It's the endless keg of Guinness.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of, I'm working away in the garden for most of the year, and you know, I love people's enjoyment of the garden. So I love chatting with people when they come round, and it's just great to see people enjoying themselves. And there's a little beach down on the at the bottom of the garden, and people often bring a picnic down there. And yeah, I mean, we're sitting here at the moment on a beautiful sunny Kerry day. They're not always like this, but you know, today is pretty special. And we've had a good crowd in the garden. People just very happy just to sort of, you know, take their time and enjoy it.
For those of you who have never been here before, or for those of you who are going to come here and you've listened to this, when you come into the car park, you'll walk up towards the glasshouse directly in front of you. There's a wee pebbled area just behind that where I had coffee. It's good coffee, by the way. Directly to your right-hand side, there's a couple of picnic benches. And just as you walk towards them, underneath the shade of the lime tree, I gather it is right behind me, that's just where we're sitting, and it's nice. There's people over to our right hand side having coffee. There's a family sitting in front of us, or near enough to us, reading books on the lawn. People reading books on the lawn on a sunny day. How's about that for you? Yeah. Who needs Pokemon.com in brackets? And there's another family off, and then there's people doing the route of the gardens. Right. So when I look at the size of an area of a piece of ground like this, I would gather then you either have a major love for horticulture or a major love for being outside in the great outdoors. Kerry weather in mind, subsection. Weather may be sunshiny like today. We are extremely lucky. Please go forward. Step two, it may also be the alternate, which is what we would know as real Kerry weather for real Kerry men. So it's kind of two extremes, but also somewhere in the middle as well.
Well, the great thing about Kerry is you can't really get away from it. It does rain a lot here. But it's also very warm, and I can't handle wet and cold, but warm and wet is kind of okay. And also, I mean, you get a lot of beautiful days here as well. So on the whole, you know, it's kind of it's a very nice place to work outside. And even the fine misty rain here is often actually I even prefer being in that kind of fine misty rain to the just dull, overcast, cloudy days. You know, it can be magical. And the garden it's a garden of mosses and ferns and all that kind of thing. And it somehow goes very well with the damp climate.
Was your father a gardener? Did he pass that on to you? Did you grow plants under your bed and bracket sideshow bingo? Were you one of them? Did you grow them on top of the wardrobe? How did this love come about? Because let's be quite honest about this. Somebody turns around and says, do you want to, you know, I won't say farm, but do you want to, let's be more petite about it, propagate? Do you want to look after? Do you want to maintain? Do you want to nurture this estate of such grand acreage? And your head goes, do I really? No or yeah? It's quite a simple yes or no game, isn't it?
Well, my dad was a tree man, and he loves trees, and he's always, you know, always planting trees. He loves planting trees to commemorate anything, a birthday, a whatever it is, Christmas, any excuse, and he's planting trees. And I think it just kind of seeped into me. And so gradually through my teens, I started to get the whole tree thing. And this is a tree garden, really. It's a woodland garden, you know. There aren't that many kind of flower beds and that sort of thing. And so it just sort of seeped into me. And then I went off and went to university, and then about my mid-20s, I started thinking, you know, maybe I read the wrong subject and all this sort of thing. And I went back and I did, then I got into landscape architecture, and I trained as a landscape architect, and I worked for a long time in London and Spain and various places. And then I kind of thought, actually, where do I really, really want to be working? And, you know, the answer really is Kerry. And this is the most fantastic project. And really, I've been doing this now for 3 years, but it's by far and away the most enjoyable job I've done.
So who was, pre your 3 years, who looked after it then?
My parents. My parents were pretty full, you know, they did a lot of work in the garden, mostly spring and autumn. There was a great, fantastic gardener here who's been looking after the place he did 50 years here. And now there's a couple of gardeners here who, you know, look after the place on a day-to-day basis. I'm kind of looking after the cafe in the summer, but then in the winter I'm in the garden full-time. So it's a kind of, you know, there's three of us really.
Tree looking after how many acres?
It's about 60 acres.
That's 20 acres a man. That's, you know, 1.8 acres a month. That's kind of pretty, yeah, that's efficient operational.
But I guess that's the great thing about a woodland garden. You know, you could have an acre, 2 acre garden, and you could have 3 people full time on it. Your 60 acre woodland garden, you know, it's hard work, but you can do it. You know, some of the garden is naturally regenerates. We've got amazing tree ferns here, and they've kind of taken over one sort of area of the garden, and that sort of, you know, so that becomes fairly easy to look after. But And then we've got sort of 4 or 5 acres of sort of mown areas. So it's kind of, it's not as bad as it sounds, the 60 acres. But it is a lot of work.
It sounds good. That's what it does. What do you do when you walk in here? I've brought you in here for the first time. And obviously you have a knowledge of the place secretly. But my mate Anthony McGuinness comes here for the very, very, very first time. He arrives at 12 o'clock. Well, what's the best way to get here? Where does he go? Which route does he come in? How much is it going to cost him? How does all that bit work? What's the pearls of wisdom from the man who knows it best?
Well, I guess, you know, this garden always used to be incredibly remote. But it's not so remote anymore. You know, we're very close to Kenmare, Bantry, Castletown, Bearhaven. And so easily accessible from all those places, you know, it's on the Wild Atlantic Way and all this sort of thing. So it's becoming a much more accessible. I mean, the garden was opened for the first time in the 70s. And to be honest, before that, you know, there were so few people in this area, it wasn't even worth opening. And for the first 10 years, we'd probably have like sort of 10 visitors a week. So, you know, everything's changing around here, and, you know, more and more people are coming down to this beautiful area. So, you know, it's just, it's open now year round. I mean, that's one of the big things is traditionally this garden was, a spring garden, rhododendrons. And we're trying to make it more and more, a year round garden. So it's open year round, €7 to get in. Various sort of family tickets and that sort of thing, family discounts available. It's kind of easy, and it's only 2 hours from Cork now. You know, it used to be a lot longer than that.
You mentioned that thing earlier on. Okay, well, there's two things that have come out of this. Number one, you're open year round, which is slightly unusual. But number two, I know I had this conversation eons ago before they redid it up at Malahide Castle in North County Dublin, and one part of the gardens, which were herbaceous, used to close for pretty much 6 months of the year. And I never understood that as a guy who, I guess, embraced horticulture or loved horticulture and still do, but I always wanted to see them whilst they were prettying themselves up to go out to the nightclub. I wanted to see them when they were at the nightclub, and I wanted to see them not so much maybe on the way home with the kind of kebab. That's a really bad analogy, if you get me. But I wanted to see it in all of its glory and not in its greatest looking state, so I could horticulturally understand what was happening and see it evolving. And then there's also that bit where there's the soft rain. And I have to agree, there is nothing finer on a warm day than the soft rain coming down on your face. It is absolutely stunning, and I nearly prefer it to the sunshine that we're having at this moment in time. When you walk out here in December, do you get visitors come out? Do they do that thing? Because it's, as you said, predominantly trees.
Visitor numbers go way down in the winter months. But there is something really magical about this place in the winter. And I mean, I absolutely love it. I love it year round. And funny enough, you know, what with all the rhododendrons and the tree ferns, the garden changes a lot less in the winter months than a lot of places. You know, you can come here. I mean, I have friends who come and stay here, and they're just amazed by how green everything is in the winter months. You know, from that point of view, it doesn't change so much. So I think it's a great place to come in the winter.
You really do, though. Well, I say you really do. You at home, I turn around and go, get lost, Donegan. I'm not walking around a couple of 60 acres of gardens in the middle of winter. You're off your trolley. But it is very much that. It's one thing to see it in the summertime when everything's in flower, and that's entirely understandable. The other side of it, it's a different awakening. It's a different game changer when you turn around and go, oh, gee, it's like somebody repainting your home, and then you wake up the next morning and they turn it back to what it originally was. It's so majestic. It's beautiful, in particular with trees that were planted so long ago at this stage of the game.
Yeah, exactly. And you get, you know, in the winter, you get the, you know, the structure of these, you know, some of these wonderful old trees. And, you know, you pick up on things which you don't see in the summer. I mean, the ancient old oaks here, you know, which I have to say, always be one of my favourite trees. They are the ones which have always been here, but, you know, they're such wonderful old trees. And they kind of look fantastic in the winter months. So, and we've got a lot of conifers. The conifers, obviously don't change so much from one season to another. No, I think, you know, bring on the winter. I kind of love it here.
But he owns a freaking place, and I'm agreeing with him. Okay. Well, let's change this slightly then. Are there kids involved? Wife? Is there a good lady behind the scenes?
There's a very good lady in the background. Also, sometimes even in the foreground. We kind of live nearby, she's becoming more and more interested in the garden herself. Two lovely kids, and they love being here. So it's great. It's a great family place.
That in mind, are you finding that the style of person or groups of people who visit here are starting to change? Is that starting to evolve? Because let's be quite frank about it. Stereotypically, it would have been somebody who was maybe a bit older than myself, by a bit, maybe. Usually arrives in a coach. You do the garden touristing. It's not something for, again, my mate Anthony McGuinness, unless I ring him and say, listen, we're going on a bus journey, don't worry about it, just hop on. And what's that line? If you're offered a space on a rocket ship, don't ask why, just get on. One of them. That's McGuinness's kind of thing, and it works, and it's never bad. But the greater percentage would be, are you starting to see that that's starting to change, maybe to the family side of it, that they're starting to come in and go, oh my god, this is back of the wardrobe stuff, this is the secret cubbyhole underneath the staircase, and you open it and you walk out into just magnificence.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've kind of always, you know, I was I grew up here. I've always regarded it as a sort of a young person place, really. So, and I think, you know, I mean, it's great to have kids around and stuff. We've got lots of little fairy houses around the garden, which the kids love during the summer, finding all the different fairy houses. I suppose, you know, the times of the traditional times of sort of greatest interest, I suppose, in the garden were the spring and the autumn, and then you get a slightly different age group coming. You know, it tends to be sort of a little bit older during those months. And then obviously July, August, it's much more sort of a family oriented thing. But all ages.
What's the upcoming for the next couple of years? Most great gardens that I know turn around and say, okay, we've got that, we need to make it evolve, we need to change. It's a conversation that comes up all the time, that if you leave a garden's sit as it should, as it is, it tends to either go stale or nature changes it on you. Do you look at things and turn around and go, right, plan two, year two, that's happening, you're coming down, you're coming out, and people go, oh my god, he's up there, he's doing the thing, he's wrecking the place, as, oh my god, he's a genius. do you do that? Do you get that? Do they say that? Do they? And then the picture starts to reform and starts to refresh itself, and you have to then go up and see that thing. Is that the way it works?
Well, I totally agree with you that, you know, the moment you try and tread water, things kind of tend to go backwards. So I think you need to have some kind of long-term plan. Think about where you're heading. In a way, that decision was slightly taken for us. You know, February 2014, when we lost 100 big trees in the garden. So that kind of, you know, sort of, that led to a extensive sort of replanting. So, and then you start to think, you know, which direction do you want to go in? Do you want to sort of put it back how it was before, or do you want to try something new? And I think, you know, it's always more exciting to try something new, and there's, you know, so many possibilities now, you know, new plants coming in which didn't, you know, weren't around my parents' generation. So it's, you know, it's fantastic. We're just trying all sorts of new things, and you know, we've probably planted more in this garden in the last 3 years than has been planted in the last, in the 400 years. So it's really exciting, you know, definitely moving forward.
Numbers on gardens, I won't ask you for specifics, but in all great estates, I say estates, it can be 2 acres, it can be 200 acres, that's immaterial. The conundrum is always this chicken and egg thing. We need people to come in to get the money. We need to get the money to change the things. And the people maybe won't come in until we change the things. We're back to the previous question of, you know, you need to make change consistently over a period of time, or have that grand plan in place. Have numbers started to increase because from, let's say, the dip years, the leaner years, as we would call them, that excess money might have been chalked off the board? Has there been a re-evolution of garden visiting, of how gardens are perceived, how gardening is perceived? Do you see that changing? You're a young enough man yourself. You're not as good looking as me, I should note, but, you know, I've got a face for radio. Yeah. We'll keep that joke there. Is that starting to change? Is that picture starting to change?
Yeah. I mean, you know, took a dip after 2007, 2008 or whatever. And then started coming back, you know, numbers started coming back pretty strong. The Wild Atlantic Way has been great for us. But I kind of sense that there's just a real sort of growing interest in the country. You know, there seem to be so many more people from Ireland coming to the garden, which is fantastic. You know, I mean, it's really, really nice to see. And we're getting gardening groups from all over the country. And that's, you know, it's just great to see the interest is there. And long may it continue.
And I've been here, so that's definitely, they're going to put a cardboard cutout of me at the entrance to the gardens, and I'll just be pointing entrance that way, and you can get your photograph taken with me. Fiver ahead, by the way, I'm only joking. All right, on a serious note, West Cork Garden Trail, all the details are up there at SodShow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSodShow, and SodShow.com for the entire back catalogue. Anything you're stuck on while you're listening to this, walking the back roads, on the commute in this morning, just send us a note and we'll put you directly in touch with them. In the meantime, thank you so much for your time, a real treat.
Thank you. Big red.